2:10, chapter 62, slok number 7 and 8. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. The chapter entitled, from 10th canto, The Meeting of Usha and Aniruddha. Text 7. Kandutya Nibhrutair Dorbhir Yuyutsur Diggajan Aham Adhyayam Churunayan Adrin Bhitas Te Pi Pradudruvuhu Kandutya Nirbhruttai Dorbhair Yuyutsur Diggajanaham Adhyayam Churunayan Adrin Bhitaste Pradudurva Bhitaste Pi Pradudruvuhu Kandutya Nibhrutai Dobhir Yutsur Diggajanaham Adhyayam Churunayan Adrin Bhitaste Pi Pradudruvuhu. Kandutya Nibhrutai Daurbhir Yutsur Diggajanaham Adhyayam Churunayan Adrin Bhitaste Pi Pradudruvuhu. Kandutya Nibhrutai Adrin Bhitaste Pi Pradudruvuhu. Matajis. Kandutya with itching, Nibhrutai filled, Dorbihi with my arms, Yutsuhu eager to fight, Dik of the directions, Gajan the elephants, Aham I, Adya O primeval one, Ayam went, Churunayan, crushing to powder, Adrin, mountains, Bhitaha, frightened, they, Api, even, Pradudruvuhu, ran away. Translation, this is Banasur, Vacha. Eager to fight with the elephants, who rule the direction, O primeval Lord, I went forth pulverizing mountains with my arms, which were itching for the battle. For even those great elephants fled in fear. There is no purport, so we'll go to the next verse.
Tachchutrava Bhagavan Kuddha Ketuste Bhajyate Yada Tvaddarpagnam Bhaven Mooda Sayugam Matsamenate.
Hearing this, Lord Shiva became angry and replied, "Your flag will be broken, O fool, when you have done battle with one who is my equal. That fight will vanquish your conceit." What is the meaning of conceit? Pride. Okay, conceit. Purport. Lord Shiva could have immediately chastised Banasur and personally destroyed his pride. But since Banasur had been such a faithful servant of his, Lord Shiva did not do so.
Om Ajnanatimirandhasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupak Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam. Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Padum Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam is Lord's arrangement to do simple things in a most glorious way. Like Lord Shiva could have immediately destroyed the pride. But then there is a whole gamut of leela that is going to take place to perform this pastime. Immediately after this verse, the whole focus will switch over to some other thing. And then you'll wonder why it is happening. And then one chapter ends, and the next chapter connects this verse with the actual leela that takes place. So, the story of Banasur going on. The genealogical table is like this. Garbhodaka Shai Vishnu gives rise to Brahma on the lotus. And then Brahma gives birth to Marichi as his service. Marichi gives birth to Kashyapa Muni. Kashyapa Muni gives birth through Diti to Hiranyakashipu or Hiranyaksha. Hiranyaksha gives birth to Prahlad. And Prahlad's son is Virochan. Virochan's son is Bali Maharaj. And Bali Maharaj had 100 sons. The oldest of these 100 sons was Banasur, Bana. His wife's name is Kandala. So Banasur had his kingdom in Shonitpur. The Shonitpur is actually today's Tezpur in Assam. And I read somewhere that it is near actually Kedarnath. Kedarnath is Himalayas, but it's very near behind Kedarnath. And he had his capital in Banpur. And that happens to be in Bundelkhand in Uttar Pradesh. That means you can imagine from under the Himalayas, from Assam, all the way till UP, he had his great kingdom. So today's Bundelkhand is that time's Banpur in UP. He had two sons. One is Skanda and his daughter was named as Usha. Because he was a great devotee of Lord Shiva, he kept his son's name as Skanda. His daughter worshipped a Shivalinga near his palace, near a river called Jamdhar. Actually, her Shivalinga had appeared from the river Jamdhar only. And that Shiva which emerged from that river was called as Kundeshwar Mahadev. Banasur had a fort in Kotha village of Sohanpur. And there is also the field where Sri Krishna ultimately had a battle with him, which is still existing today. And that is in Devariya district near Sohanpur. And one more place is there called as Sohagra, which is near Banasur's palace. And that is supposed to be Banasur's place of worship, where the biggest Shivalinga in India is existing. That is where he worshipped actually, Lord Shiva. Now, there is also a place near his house called as Okimat. And Okimat is a place where Lord Kedarnath would stay in winter times when Kedarnath main temple would get closed in those days. And that is the place where Usha and Anirudh were married. They got married there. It's the location. Now, the story goes like this, that he was a great devotee of Lord Shiva. He really spent years after years after years in worshipping Lord Shiva. I was just wondering the timeline. Bali Maharaj appeared in Satya Yuga. Is that right? So Bali Maharaj had 100 sons. Maybe few years later, 100 sons. But still, it appears to me logically that he was there in Satya Yuga, Treta Yuga and Dwapar Yuga also, if I am logically correct. Because he exists in Krishna Leela, which is in end of Dwapar Leela. And Bali Maharaj was there in Satya Yuga. And Bali Maharaj gave birth to his children, you know, during that time only. So he must be having a really huge body. So he worshipped Lord Shiva with great concentration. It is said whenever a demon or a devotee applies his mind in concentration on certain things, great power and opulence arises. Even if one is wrongly motivated, but if he puts his mind in one place and concentrates, that means meditation, worships, great powers pursue. That's why we see Kumbhakarna, Ravana, Kamsa, so many great demons, like, you know, we cannot even compare today's demoniac people with them. They're so demoniac, but at the same time so powerful, unbelievably powerful, even that they would defeat the demigods. Frequently, all these big guys come and first day what they do is defeat all the demigods, dethrone them and enjoy their kingdom. So powerful they were. So similarly, Banasur worshipped Lord Shiva and pleased Lord Shiva. So Lord Shiva bestowed upon him three things. One thing is invincibility. Nobody will be able to defeat you. Immense power, of variety of kinds of power, mystic powers and physical powers and authority and other things. And third thing, he blessed him with 1,000 arms. Now, you can imagine his body was able to accommodate 1,000 arms. We have only space for 2 arms. Even if we were to imagine they have 4 arms, it will be a little odd, you know, from where it will come out, where the joints will be. Here there are 1,000 ball and socket joints, shoulder joints. And each arm is so powerful. It's not that because of so much of crowd was there and they didn't know where to move the 990th hand and where, what about 889th hand, how it will move. It's so much confusion, traffic jam and locking among themselves. It's not like that. It was so smooth and each arm was so powerful. Now, then what he did is, because he was a genuine devotee of Lord Shiva, Lord Shiva was dancing during Tandava, so he played mridanga with his 1,000 arms. Maybe 500 mridangas, each having 2 arms, well coordinated, well located, the 500, I just cannot imagine how the 500 mridangas must be placed and how you must be playing and how there must be synchrony and harmony between all those, with devotion and attention and concentration. So much so that Lord Shiva was so pleased actually. And Lord Shiva again said, please ask for a boon. And this time he said, please stay near my house. That means in my kingdom, near my palace, so I can easily worship you. And please protect me and my kingdom also. So Lord Shiva immediately started residing over there. So this is the history of Banasur actually. What gave him so much powers and how he was devoted to Lord Shiva. But then, as soon as, you know, one gets invincibility and power and authority and sovereign control over situations, and when that is not actually situated in proper devotion to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, or not used for the process of self-realization, or for the benefit of everybody else, then immediately it starts corrupting us. It is said, when you get power, power corrupts absolutely. This is one kind of power, because invincibility, you know, and so many mystic powers, plus thousand arms were so powerful. So he became very proud, and immediately he started attacking demigods, and he defeated all of them, and more so that he terrified everybody. He said his atrocities were so ghastly that he didn't even leave any living entity. He was harming everybody. He pulverized all the mountains by beating them with their hands and powdered them. He would challenge elephants. Elephant will flee away. You know, he would smash them. He uprooted majority of the trees in his kingdom. Because so much power is there. It's like, you know, if you go to gymnasium, and suppose you are working on your arms, and you do a lot of exercise on arms, someday only arms you do. And suppose you have some important engagements, and next day you don't go to gymnasium. You know what happens? Your body starts itching, you know, like you need to do something. Physical activity. It just, you cannot just, that body will tell you, use me, muscles will tell you, use me. Here there are, you know, 10 inches biceps, 1 hour exercise, you know, how much development is there, how much strength is there. You can imagine 1,000 arms of a person like Banasur, and he has nothing to do, there is no activity. He has already gone and used his power against all the demigods and used his time and engagement with nothing more left now. So he is pulverizing mountains and elephants and uprooting trees, and there is nothing more left now, what to do? So much itching is there. Why? Only because of one reason. It is not used in service to Krishna. Ambarish Maharaj did not have this problem. Ambarish Maharaj's every sense was engaged in service to the Lord. Every single sense. Some sense like, subtle sense like nose, and some gross senses like hands and legs. Everything was used in service to Krishna. So he was never disturbed, although he was the king of the universe, you know, Chakravarti Samrat. You know, what to do, he was not. The king Kulashekhar also had so much power, but all his mind and body was, intelligence was fully absorbed in hearing Ramkatha. So he was never a nuisance to anybody. In fact, he was such a pleasure to everybody. His consciousness was so inspiring. So here, he was just restless actually. So he approached Shiva again and told, please do something. I need an equal match, I need to fight. And it is said that in between the lines he was suggesting, Lord Shiva, why don't you fight with me? Let us try that, you know. My itch is so strong. He was such a foolish thing. His worshipable Lord, who actually awarded him the 1,000 arms, who actually was trying to serve in the beginning, to please, now he is thinking that I will have an equal match with you. I remember the story of Punar Mushaka Bhava. Everything was given by the sadhu to the rat. And the rat finally wanted to stare at sadhu only, to eat him. And sadhu could immediately remove all the powers and made him rat again. Shiva also could have done that. But then, even Lord Shiva is a great devotee of the Lord. He also wants to do something in connection with his Lord. Even if he has to reward or punish his devotee, he will see how it will connect with the Lord. How it will help my Lord to perform his pastimes, to fulfill his purposes, and how it will enhance his glory. So he, you know, restrains himself from punishing his devotee right there. So he said, you fool, you don't understand what you're talking. And what he did was, he actually gave him one flag. And he told him, you put this flag post near your palace. The day this flag post will get uprooted on its own accord, that day you will find your own match, your equal match, and you will come to know who is he. So he suggested that Lord Krishna will come and will be the equal match for you. But he said, Krishna, that coward, you know, how he can fight with me? But still, he was eager to know who is that equal match and when the flag post will be, you know, uprooting itself. Then of course, you know, Krishna came and fought with him and cut off his 996 arms. and kept forearms. That way cutting off all his pride that he had. And actually speaking, by that wonderful surgery, he got really pacified. That effect that those 996 arms extra had on him, on his intelligence, on his consciousness, was along with the arms reduced, nullified. And he became actually normal actually. So Lord is very merciful. Lord does things which appear to be painful in the beginning, but actually it's a very wonderful surgery that Lord did, which helped him spiritually. As a soul, as a part and parcel of Supreme Lord Sri Krishna, it helped him. And he actually became very sobered down and a wonderful devotee. It is said that there is a place called, when this happened, Banasur actually begged Lord Shiva to bless him, to make him one of his ganas. Because you know, one time what happened was that when Banasur went to Kailash to see Lord Shiva, he just went without any rules and regulations, didn't take any permission or any formalities, just walked in. So all the ganas who were guarding Kailash, they didn't like it. Who is this person just walking in so arrogantly and so indisciplinary manner? So one of the ganas lifted him and threw him. So can you imagine how much powerful the gana must be of Lord Shiva? Threw him like a wasp, like an insect. And he fell on the one Chakravala mountain. And then he worshipped Lord Shiva. And then he got those 1,000 arms. So he, after getting defeated from Krishna, he begged Lord Shiva to make him one of the ganas. And Lord Shiva made him one of the ganas, so he can serve him constantly. Also, he asked Lord Shiva to be able to play his drum continuously as he was playing before, although now only 4 arms are there. And he said, the lingam that he worshipped near his palace, the biggest lingam in India, that should be the reverential place for all the world, the place of worship. Reverential place of worship for all of the world. This is what he asked. So then, this is the story in a nutshell. Of course, a lot of things are going to happen in between. But this, thinking about these 1,000 arms, I was just thinking that this power that we have, suppose somebody is 6 feet and 2 inches tall and has masculine body which weighs 115 kilos. But that itself makes him so proud. When he walks on the road, he looks down upon everybody. Or somebody has a weapon in his hand. He is a very small guy, but he has a weapon. His body language immediately changes. If he has a knife, or if he has a sword, or if he has a gun, or a policeman on the airport who has a machine gun with him, immediately his body language changes. If he goes home, his body language will change. Because the power that you have upon you, gross or subtle, makes changes in your consciousness. For example, a soul in tiger's body thinks that he is tiger, and his whole demeanor is different. And if you are a deer, your demeanor is different. If you are a rat or a rabbit, you think differently. Similarly, subtle powers, like if one has lot of wealth, then you see the rich man's children, how arrogant they are, how proud and puffed up they are, how they squander money, they think they are so great, we can buy anything on the road. And you can see a municipality officer or a government officer or a officer who is in highly placed, how arrogant he is, because his chair is giving him so much power, he can see things that he can do anything. So his eyes and his talking style is so arrogant because of the power, subtle power that he has. He may not be masculine, he may be 4 inches, 2 feet. 4 feet, 2 inches. But he's sitting in the chair, he will be dictating a person who is 6 feet and 4 inches. So, udhar khada raho, stand there. He has that power because of this authority that he has got. Against this, if we find a sick person, if he has tuberculosis, admitted in the hospital, his mentality is totally different. If he is weak physically, if he is not very beautiful, he has ugly face, he is not as good as, good looking as others. He has natural humility. Either he is angry on everybody because he doesn't have so many facilities others have, or he may be humble genuinely, he is not so beautiful or strong or well educated. So these are various situations I told you. Poverty, illiteracy, weakness, not having beauty, sickness, old age. The same man who is at 25 years old, he will be in different consciousness. But when he gets 50, he has joint pains and he has got backache. is different. His whole thinking process is different. Why we are discussing all these things? Because all these things, when we are not devotees of Krishna, when we are not spiritually oriented, all these things positively or negatively affect us and make our personality accordingly. Even a person is driving a truck, an illiterate Sardarji, he looks down upon a person who is riding a bicycle and he'll shout at him, get away from my road. Or a rickshaw. A rickshaw driver may be 6 feet 4 inches. But because he's sitting in a truck, he has a different mentality. So whatever we are covered with, body-wise or externally, with powers or a physical thing like a truck, immediately changes your demeanor. And we have to be very careful about it as devotees. Because when we are in sadhaka stage, and suppose we become very rich, then immediately the richness will start affecting you. You know philosophy, you read and you hear every day. But because you are not pure devotees, immediately that power that comes to you starts affecting you. Like money, like position. That is why Banasura had difficulty. Actually, he came in frustration, he came in boredom, he came in disturbance, you know. Okay, these 1,000 arms, what I should do with them? This is our situation. So it is a great expertise in the life of devotees to use everything that comes upon you, subtly or grossly, as opulence, to use in service to the Lord. It's not easy actually. When power comes, it really corrupts us, our consciousness. That power may be good singing capacity, good lecture giving capacity, good efforts of good power of influencing people and making them do what you want them to do, gathering people, loka sangraha, collecting people under you, make them, you know, friendly to you, having a large group of people who are familiar to you or friendly to you. These are all things which come up now as we become devotees and we start preaching. We know, then time comes, we will start bowing down to you, worshipping you sometimes, glorifying you like anything, become your fans like anything. And you start feeling, I'm so great actually. See, I spoke to him and look at the change that I caused in his life. But the devotee means he doesn't identify with any of these opulences which are coming to him. He always knows it is coming from Sri Krishna. Everything that is wonderful, strong, powerful, he is the power behind that, he is the source behind that. By his splendor, all these things are appearing. Minus him, everything is zero. And one day when Krishna wants to show you the reality, he will make you fall down and then we understand everything is still there but nothing is there, everything is gone. That is Sri Krishna's situation. So we have to constantly be cognizant of the fact that whatever I have today, all is a gift from Krishna. It is not my achievement. I may have worked for it, I may have worked hard also, but the result that I am getting is not because of my hard work, is because of the mercy of the Lord. Because many people are working maybe more hard than me for the same things, but they do not appear to get it, what I have got it. Or I have spoken to 50 people with the same fervor and same strength of my desire to give them Krishna consciousness, but only one has taken up Krishna consciousness. So if it was mine, then all 51 should have become devotees. All persons whom I met in Jeju Hospital should have become devotees. Only few became devotees. That shows that it is Krishna only actually. It is not me. But to be cognizant of that constantly actually makes us purified. If you are aware all the time that my duty is to simply do service, to try my best, and Sri Krishna will decide whom to get influenced and whom to convert into his devotee. I am simply an instrument. To keep up with this consciousness constantly is a challenge for the devotee. And that is why we need good association of humble and surrendered devotees. As per Bhagavad Gita, what is the principle of renunciation? The principle of renunciation is not to give up things. The principle of renunciation is to give up the ownership of those things which don't belong to you. Which we think they are ours. When they come to us, what happens immediately? We start thinking, it's mine. All the opulence is mine, I'm the cause behind it. See how hard I worked. That's why I have all those opulences. Immediately to identify and to become owner of those opulences. But Krishna consciousness, as per Bhagavad Gita, is to give up that ownership. What we learn from Bhagavad Gita is, what is it that we have ourselves to give up? We didn't have it in the beginning. So how can we give up that thing which we don't have from beginning only? It is always given to us. It is a borrowed wealth. All that we have. And that borrowed wealth can gloriously stay with you and do wonders in life. If you are aware that it is not mine, it is given to me simply to use in service to Krishna and devotees. Then that borrowed wealth also appears so magnanimous and so wonderful and so mysterious that it can create wonders beyond your imagination. Even you have those powers and use them in service to Krishna sincerely and humbly, and you expect a result, the result will be 10 times more than what you expect. Simply because of the inner consciousness that a devotee has. So we have to harbor and cultivate that consciousness that yes, Krishna gave me some powers, I use them, and such wonderful results are, they are not mine. The results are because of Him. And thank you, my Lord. Let me use my, whatever you have given me, in your service constantly. And let me not get proud. Because His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj says, when the opulence that you have, physically like money, subtly like power, authority, influence, chair, if that is not used in service to the Lord, it has destructive effects in one's spiritual life, and it also disturbs one's material happiness also. That doesn't mean that, because sometimes when spiritual life is being destroyed, you are not even aware of that. A person when gets into Maya, he doesn't even know that his spiritual life is being destroyed. But obviously he will come to know when his material happiness gets destroyed. So that is the difficulty when one doesn't use his opulences, God-given opulences, maybe due to his karmas in the past, but they are God-given. When not utilized in service to Krishna, it damages spiritual life and also disturbs material happiness. Then one's intelligence gets polluted with pride when we don't use it in service to Krishna. And that prideful intelligence, with that one gets attached to the opulence as his own. He starts thinking that they belong to me. And perpetually such person suffers. Where is the suffering root of suffering? Moment you consider things that you have belong to you and you don't think that it belongs to Krishna, your suffering actually begins. In Bhagavad Gita 2.65 and 66, it is explained that if you do not attach your mind to service to Krishna, you don't focus your intelligence in service to Krishna, and do not make them steady, mind and intelligence steady in service to Krishna, only suffering will come in our life. People wonder why I am suffering so much, I am working so hard, what to do. The reason is our mind is not steady in the service of the Lord. Mind means through indriyas, when the 5 senses are not focused in service to Krishna, mind is not focused in service to Krishna, intelligence is bahushakam, many branched, and all the sufferings that you can expect start flowing in your life. And moment you put your senses in service to Krishna, your mind gets steady at the feet of Krishna, your intelligence gets fixed in service to Krishna, only happiness starts coming in your life. That is the whole secret of our life. The whole reason, whole formula of becoming happy is this only. And when one burns in such a fire of pride, don't think that only he suffers. He makes his family suffer, he makes his samaj suffer, he makes his country also suffer. And what is the example? Ravana. He was singing all that power that he had, which he worshipped Lord Shiva, did tapasya, gained all the benedictions. Now they all belong to him. Now he will destroy everybody and show them how great he is. And everything that the world has is meant for my happiness. All the beautiful things and beautiful ladies, they are meant for my pleasure. He didn't die himself. He took everybody along with him. All his rakshasa dynasty, everybody died. Although dead, they were not so powerful as him. They were not thinking like him. But because they were attached to him, they had to suffer all the consequences that he went through. Because of identification with all the opulences that he had. And misuse of them in his own grandeur. He himself suffered and made everybody suffer. Suffer means physical loss, mental loss, emotional loss, social loss, everything was there. Complete destruction was there. And spiritual, of course, was there. So having great opulence also of such kind, when it is not in service to Krishna, attracts envy of others. And then creates fear and insecurity in the hearts of people who have those opulences. Ravana was arrogant, so he had not so much insecurity. But generally speaking, when we get powers, people become envious of us. Opposite point of view, if this opulences, powers, utilized in service to the Lord, it gives incredible benefits in one's spiritual life. Benefits many other people who are around you, kinsmen, countrymen, everybody who is in touch with you, become benefited. You get benefited, so exactly opposite like Ravana. When you use your power to serve Krishna, you get benefited, you advance spiritually, you get purified, you can do wonderful things beyond your imagination, and people who are in touch with you also get blessed, and they make progress in spiritual life. So this Banasur was the emblem of this, that he failed to utilize those arms and the strength of the arms in service to Krishna. That is why finally, of course, he was not destroyed. Because of his attachment to pure devotee like Lord Shiva, he was saved actually. Otherwise Lord Krishna would have destroyed him. There was no problem for Krishna, who cut his 996 arms by chakra. Remaining 4 arms were not a big deal for him. At that time Lord Shiva approached him. He says, "Please, my Lord, he is my devotee, please spare him. Give him a chance to serve you." So that time Lord released him. So it is mentioned in Bhagavatam also, that because of his attachment and devotion to pure devotee like Lord Shiva, he was saved from total destruction. And he was given a serenity or a sober nature of his consciousness. But finally, this Banasura's history is very interesting actually. He became Gana and he served Lord Shiva and all. But one time Parvati Devi, Devi Kanyakumari, was worshipping Lord Shiva at Kanyakumari place, wherever we have Kanyakumari today, at the southern end of India. And out of her devotion and tapasya, Lord Shiva was pleased, and Shiva was coming to get married to Devi. But some calculations by the priest went wrong, and the murta was lost. So the Bharat has to go back. And all the food that was cooked, variety of items, colorful items, they turn into sand. That is why Kanyakumari sand is multicolored. Also, it is said that all the jewels that were accumulated for the marriage were also squandered here and there out of frustration. They also became sand. And then looking at the situation, his Banasura went there. And he was very attracted by the beauty of Kanyakumari. And he proposed her, "Why don't you get married with me? I am also eligible bridegroom." She became very angry actually. He pursued. She became very angry. Then she turned into Bhadrakali. And she killed him. But just before dying, he had come to his full senses back. So he said, "Please bless me that I become your devotee and I serve you and stay. Please don't destroy me completely." So he died physically, but he ultimately received her blessings. This is the Banasura's complete story from beginning to end. So you can see that lot of things to learn from Banasura's story, that any opulence that comes to us, we should be very careful, that knowing that it's not ours, it's coming from Krishna. And we should always try to engage that opulence, always use that power, expertise to serve Krishna. Because even if we are selfish for our own purposes, it is still beneficial to use that opulence in service to Krishna. Because the first one to get benefited is you when you serve. And along with you, many more people will get served. So you will be happy and satisfied. At the same time, many people will be happy and satisfied around you. But the moment we think it is ours, our misery begins. So we to save ourselves, all that we have, we should use in service to Krishna. It's very difficult actually, not to identify that as Krishna's. I mean, to fail to identify it belongs to Krishna, and to use in service to Krishna. There is always a race and tug of war. I feel that I must also enjoy, you know, this is my wealth. And I want to have, so many things are there which I can enjoy myself and I can purchase. But I should restrain myself and use everything for service to Krishna. And keep only in the immense wealth that I have, keep all only things that are necessary for my maintenance. So Prabhupada explains in that 2.65 that what is the secret of devotees' happiness? That devotees only use things from their great opulence only for their maintenance. And that's how they free themselves from the effect of three miserable sufferings, trivida tap. How one can free oneself from trivida tap is to only take from nature or from your opulence, so-called opulence, things to only maintain yourself. And it's a big tussle, subtly, in the mind. Why only maintenance? I can take little more. I can buy one more kurta and become little fashionable as per the current trend. So it's a big struggle. It's a lifetime process. To pray to Krishna to help us to try to use everything in His service and see that we don't identify with the opulence that we have as ours. You have to keep praying. Unless you want something, how Krishna will give you? He is giving you the rewards of your service and then you start thinking it's yours. But you have to say, Krishna, it's my disease. I am having weak spirituality with which I may consider everything as mine and not yours and not use it in your service. So please help me, my Lord. Please help me to protect my consciousness of by not identifying everything belongs to me but belongs to you. And let me be in your service. My whole self, my senses, my mind, my intelligence, my opulences, subtle and gross, let it be, let all they be in your service. Then our life will be very successful. Thank you very much. Is there any question? Any comment? Anybody else? Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Shri Radha Gopinath Bhagwan ki jai.